Hi, I'm Christina Crowley-Arkley. I'm a Canadian dairy farmer's daughter, strategic marketing and communications entrepreneur, and your host for Country Guides podcast series. With renewed focus on your farm, your conversation, I sat down with farmers across Canada to talk about their stories of success and failure, what keeps them going every day, and how they're positioning themselves and their farm for generations to come. All right, let's get into it. Mark, wonderful to meet you. Really glad to get the chance to sit down with you, and thanks so much for your time.
All right.
I feel like this conversation is going to be very fruitful for the advice that I'm sure you're going to be able to share with past versions of yourself, future versions of yourself, with all of the listeners of the Country Guide podcast. But I guess start with the basics of, where do you farm? How many acres do you farm? Who's involved? We kind of want to get the elevator pitch.
Okay, the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
I farm in Sarnia. Right in the city of Sarnia. They've gone out into what used to be Sarnia Township. So most of my farms are in the city, about 4,000 acres.
Wow.
We don't have any livestock except for the unprofitable kind, like a few horses, some sheep, a couple of pigs, some chickens. But just for fun, we do corn, soybeans, wheat, and sugar beets. And
oh, amazing.
We're in Sarnia. We ship our sugar beets over to Michigan. We have that processor over there. But otherwise, it's pretty straightforward flatlander.
And so how many years have been farming? I mean, that's a lot of acres. So this is a family farm.
Kind of, yes and no. I'm actually the fourth generation of start from scratch farmer.
No way.
And the reason I say that is because my great grandfather was a farmer. My grandfather didn't want to farm. He got an in-town job. He got sick of that. He started a farm. Then my grandfather started a dairy farm. My dad didn't like the dairy. He got a job at the plants because we live in Sarnia. So got a job at the petrochemical plants. He didn't like that, so he started a pig farm. I grew up on a pig farm. I didn't like that, so I went to music school.
Okay, so that's how the musician of you came out.
I turned to be a musician. Did that for a bunch of years. Didn't like being a starving musician in Toronto, so I wanted to buy my own home. So I did in Lambton County, and bought a couple farms, got rid of the pigs, bought a couple more farms, rented some farms, and that's how we ended up farming.
So landed where you did.
My last year of teaching high school music was 2003, 20 years ago. So
wow.
I'm full-time farming since then.
Okay, so I feel like we're not going to have enough time to cover all the things that I'd want to talk to you about and ask. Because I'm like, well, first of all, in terms of advice, because it sounds like you've had a very diversified career yourself, which is very rare, right, for someone your age. And so, that's why I said, like, you're very very diversified in your experience and everything. So, what type of advice would you give? Would you look back now and give someone that went through the process that you did, where someone who's came from a farm, not sure if they should stay on the farm or they should pursue it again, and then end up back on the farm like you did?
Yeah.
Like, that's an incredible trajectory.
Yeah. You know, on the surface, farming doesn't seem all that profitable, if you will, compared to some jobs that you may see out of a university career. They flash a salary in front of you. Oh, I can make, an engineer or whatever. But I don't think most of us fail to consider the side benefits of farm life. And, just little things like I just got through. I have a bit of a passion for building houses just on the side. And I got an opportunity to build a house for my daughter and her son-in-law that are here and work with them and do that. You don't do that when you're in the city. And I mean, that's just one.
Like, no.
The little side benefits, the lifestyle, the friends you make, the roots you have, it's hard to replace that. And the profitability in farming varies. But in the end, we're never, we always have groceries on the table. the price of land and the price of things has gone weird and it's high. And, right now I could sell my farms and do something else and make more money.
Yeah.
Sell my farms and do nothing and make more money just investing.
Yeah.
But we don't, I tease myself about that, but we don't do it. None of us. We're not doing it. You don't see farmers just packing it in and, moving to Tahiti or something. We don't do it because we love to be where we are and do what we do. And
it's a way of life.
It's a way of life. My kids, two of the three, are farming now. One of them's in school to be a doctor. He'll probably end up on the farm.
Okay. And so what do you think you did right in terms of getting them to come back to the farm or consider rural lifestyle? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that can't say that to have that same success.
Actually, my son-in-law used to be a heavy equipment mechanic, and he wanted a rewarding career in agriculture.
And so he's now working home full-time?
A bit of a pay cut, but he loves his life, and he's not laying under a big truck all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And, And my daughter was a social worker to start. And again, I don't know, it's a draw. So I don't know if I did anything right. I think the farm does things and I think they see the passion.
Yeah.
But my kids also sometimes say, I don't want to be you when they see my head exploding or my hair on fire, because it's a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So running a business, a large business, is stressful and hard work. And
yeah,
this generation, I think, maybe doesn't want to take over the world like my generation did. And I don't know.
And so how many acres when you first started farming to where you are now, did you gradually pick up on the acreage or did you?
Yeah, gradual.
Yeah.
So my dad had some relationships with renters. He had fully retired when I came back, and he had about 600 acres worth of contracts with renters. Other than our home farm that I ended up buying from him, I bought a 300-acre farm for really cheap back in the day, even though it seemed expensive.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit lucky, and a pipeline went through and kind of paid the mortgage with the cost of what the pipeline was. And then I severed off a bush and got a little creative, and it got me started a little bit. And then I just kept buying land when it came available. It's weird now. It's hard to do, but...
Do you find, like, with those type of, because where we farm near Peterborough, I mean, you have to have those relationships with people now to be able to know what farms are coming up, what their succession plan is.
That's right. Or for leases, you know, farm lease. You just can't, I feel bad. Young people just can't become a farmer anymore. My daughter and son-in-law have 100 acres now. And it's impossible for a young person to just say, I want to be a farmer and go out and lease some land. It's just, I can't even lease more land right now. It's hard. Buying land or leasing land is kind of like planting trees. When's the best time to plant a tree?
Probably never.
20 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, right? Good call.
So the second best time to plant a tree is today.
Now, yep. Yeah.
And so even though I wish I'd have bought more farms 20 years ago, I couldn't have then.
Yeah.
It was cost prohibitive, but it seems like now, geez, that was cheap, but it wasn't cheap then. So maybe the best time to start a farm or to build that chicken barn or whatever, maybe it would have been better 20 years ago, but today's a pretty good day to start.
Yeah, which is great advice to look at things. If someone's, you know, sitting on the fence right now, but a decision, it's like, you know what, don't waste another day making the decision, go today and try it. And if you fail, heck, at least
but you're probably not going to, because we all need to eat. Agriculture is a magical sector, if you will. Manufacturing comes and goes. Automation comes and puts a certain manufacturing sector out of business, and something new pops up. Technology takes the place of whatever. But food production is food production, and we all are going to eat, and that's never going to be replaced by a different sector.
Mm.
And so it's never going to become so cost prohibitive that it becomes unprofitable. We're always going to find a way to make profit in agriculture.
As I say, so coming from a cash cropper, I appreciate this conversation to say that.
But I think, again, we need those cash crops. We need that stuff. And you shouldn't have to have a livestock farm to subsidize a cash crop farm. And the economics of people eating will always, there will be an equilibrium there somewhere. And
yeah.
There'll always be something. And the other thing with farmers that are special is if you're in another sector and it's not working out well, you can just dump it, do bankruptcy, do a different business. Farmers never do that, right?
Yeah.
We love the land. We love our homes. We love our the land. And we're not going to just bail. We're going to do everything we can to keep it going and be innovative and be, you know, be smart, be creative, maybe, and make it up.
Yeah. So, and so, I mean, and you say that you have 4,000 acres, which is a very large farm in Ontario. I know if we're talking to farmers out west, right? They laugh at some of what we're doing in Ontario.
And I have 53 different locations for those 4,000.
Which is wild. Yeah.
Which is a lot of locations, a lot of fields, lots of them.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. Yeah. How do you go about making the decision on what crops you're going to grow year to year? I mean, I'd love to go through your decision-making process.
Yeah, you know what? You're always tempted by the which one's more profitable. The corn bean thing was funny this year. Corn was a whole bunch more profitable than soybeans this spring.
Yeah.
Beans have taken over a little bit of that ground. Wheat's never profitable. I don't know why I grow it. Well, I can tell you why, but it's not a good reason. Sugar beets are usually the most profitable, but I'm obligated. Our shares in Michigan Sugar give us the right and the obligation to grow those sugar beets. So those acres are fixed.
Yeah.
But I think rotation trumps profitability, partly because you can't see into the future. So there's two things that I base my livelihood on that I have no control over: the markets and the weather. And those are the two things. You add them together, that's what I base my livelihood on. And I don't have any control over either of them. And so in the spring, you don't know what the weather's going to be like, which crops or varieties are going to be do better based on the weather patterns you're about to get.
Yeah.
Nor do you know what the markets are going to do in the marketing year that you're embarking on in the spring.
So
I stick tight to my rotation. I flex it a little bit based on, you know, I wanted to plant corn here, but now it's June and I never did get it in. Okay, forget that.
Yes.
But for the most part, I stick to my corn, soybean, wheat, sugar beet rotation. The only way to make wheat profitable is to precede it, have it precede sugar beets.
Yeah.
So you can till the ground and get some fertility on there and loosen things up and make my highest value crop better. Because, yeah, wheat's a funny crop. You should grow it, but never...
Never called a successful year growing wheat necessarily.
I double cropped a little bit of it this year. That was a winner. But other than that, or just whatever, it is what it is.
I was going to say, you brought up really, two really good points that your lifestyle is sustained by markets or weather. Yeah. And you seem pretty positive talking about that, considering it's something that we have no control over. Yeah. So how do you believe it appears, Mark, that you're a very positive, optimistic person? How, I guess, advice for your fellow farmers, as we're talking about mental health a lot now for farmers, we're a lot more transparent and vulnerable in sharing our journeys. What advice would you have for other farmers to, I guess, you know, lean into that idea of accept the things you can't control?
Which is most things.
Yeah,
I mean, I can control, I mean, this isn't really on the advice bit, but I can control doing the best job I can on every acre with the weather that I'm given. Right? Yeah. So try to hit that window when it's given to you, hit the planting window somewhere, like, you know, be ready so that when the opportunity presents itself, they say make hay when the sun shines. You be ready, because that nice day, it's hard for the younger people to get that, right? It's like their friends are in 9-to-5 jobs and it's Sunday afternoon and it's going to rain Sunday night. We got to plant now.
Yeah.
It's ready. Let's go.
Yeah.
So do the best with what you do have. I think agronomy wise, plan, make good agronomy decisions, make good farm practice decisions, and then you're going to get what you're going to get. I'm not a big crop tour guy. I don't go out this time counting kernels on cobs. I just don't. I got no management practice that I can do that would change based on how many kernels.
Yeah.
Lots of guys spend a lot of time. So the mental health thing, this is just me. I spend a lot of time not around other farmers. I spend a bunch of time at the bar with a saxophone in my hand because I play still.
Oh, amazing.
So
okay.
Play music.
You have another outlet. That you can,
So I live at the beach because we're in Sarnia. So I live on Lake Huron. I go to the beach. Go to the bar, not like to...
Yeah, to play. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sometimes. But I have a really good group of friends and I exercise a lot as well. And so
good
think
for you.
Just doing a ton of positive peer pressure exercise groups and non-farm. I think if you stay home on the farm too long, it starts to get at you.
We all just lived through the pandemic, right? That was probably the longest that a farmer has ever spent on their own land for a certain period of time, because most farmers love to get out, get to the outdoor farm show.
And through COVID that we could mostly just do what we had to do, but there was a lot less saxophone playing and
a lot less crop tours for many other farmers. Yeah.
So I think just getting out and doing other things is really important.
Yeah. Who would you say to work that you rely on for, so it sounds like from a personal standpoint, it sounds like you have a well-rounded group of friends, network that you can rely on for your mental health. From a professional standpoint, for the cropping side of things, who do you rely on for help to know what's going on, what should I be doing?
Advertisement in my agronomist is just a farmer too, but he mostly is an agronomist.
Yep.
And he calls himself your fourth man in farming.
Okay,
it's Chad good one. Anderson, and he calls himself your fourth man because he thinks that, I mean, I think that's self-deprecating. He's almost the first man, but he says you rely as a farmer on four professionals. You need your accountant. You need your lawyer for, you know, real estate deals and whatever else. What is it? He says your accountant, your farmer, your banker, and your agronomist.
Very smart advice.
To me, the agronomist is almost the first man in a lot of ways. But yeah, I can't possibly go to all the meetings, know all the newest things, know all the fertility stuff, memorize all that stuff. Just like I have an MBA as well, so I know a lot about accounting and everything, but I don't want to be the accountant.
Yeah.
So, you know, I make the accountant do the accounting things. I know lots about agronomy. I've been a farmer for, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
But Chad knows more. So I think having those professionals you can count on is really, really important.
Yeah.
And I would say the agronomist is number one. I call it Chad's great because he wants you to call him on the phone to ask questions, right?
Which he obviously does his job well then if you want to talk to him and you seek out advice from him.
Yeah, Chad, I'm thinking about planting barley this week after the sugar beets. I'll sneak that in. What's the population of that again? He says, oh, it's about $1.5 million. Did you do your germ test? I'm like, no, I forgot. Okay, well, get your germ test. Now I made my daughter count the barley seed because I didn't get the, you know, like, I don't know, just all those things that an agronomist will have in their head because they go to all the meetings all year.
Yeah.
And they're talking all the time to other agronomists, to other professionals.
How about, I have to ask, how much do you pay attention to trade in terms of like what's going on in the world and how it impacts?
That's actually another one of my professionals I forgot about, my marketing manager.
Okay. You do have one. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that's super critical because I used to, especially when I was still teaching high school and farm, and I used to check the markets myself all the time. Like I'd be on there all the time doing some day trading, watching, you know, I could tell you how what the stocks to use ratio was and all.
Was your head spinning at that point? Teaching kids?
Yeah. I was running out of there so fast to go to the farm.
Yeah.
The other teachers are complaining, oh, it's been a tough day. Can't wait to get home and crack open a beer. I'm like, are you kidding me?
You're like, you don't know what I've just lived through.
There's work to do. But some farmers like that. It's their hobby. But you just, again, the marketing professionals are spending all day in front of the screen. And especially if they're a private marketing professional that isn't necessarily also got a second master of trying to sell you for their company. Those guys are as important as the agronomist. I told you there's two things I have no control over, the markets and the weather.
Yeah.
Well, the weather, my agronomist helps manage that the best I can. My marketing professional helps me market, you know, work with what you got on the marketing side.
Yeah. It allows you to just get back to the field and do what you do best, which is growing.
The phone call. I think the prices are up. Should I sell? No, this is the backstory. These are the fundamentals. This is the technicals.
Yeah. So obviously a big piece of cash cropping is obviously the equipment side of things, right? Yep. Like you can't do what you do and be as profitable, knock on wood, depending on what you're...
You're a good interviewer. You moved through all the good things. I never would have thought of all these
things. So the machinery, I mean, I always love to know... how do you go about making the decisions you do? I dare to ask what color you drive. Like,
sure.
You
know what? I'm not a gearhead. I'm not one of those motor guys. Like, I don't shine my truck. Like, I don't care.
Okay.
I really don't, which I think actually really helps. My son-in-law cares a little more than
he's
a gearhead. His buddies. But he's like, oh, look at that truck. Like, I don't care so much, which is a good thing. So I want good equipment, the right equipment, and I want it teched out properly for the jobs we're doing, but I don't get all excited about that
stuff. Okay, yeah.
And so my stuff is green, and probably for the most part because it's green. That's why it's green. Like, it's just like, well, you stick with what you know, right?
Yeah.
But it's not new. It's not old either, but it's not new. You can get really caught up in spending way too much money on equipment if you're one of those shiny things guys.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I learned in business school, actually, is asset turnover ratios and stuff like that. You got to really do some spreadsheets and do some math. Right now, farm equipment's not depreciating, which is cool.
Yeah.
If you have a good mechanical team on your farm, you can keep the 5 to 10-year-old stuff working really well for you, and in fact sometimes maybe even better.
Yeah, because the replacement cost right now would not be
I used to go through my equipment spreadsheet every year for the accounting and for myself and revalue everything. So you got your net book value, but you also have the fair market value, and you're going through your depreciations and stuff. I used to always make the number lower on everything. Okay, well, I'll drop 10 grand off this machine, 10 grand off that. Now I'm almost starting to add
value. Yeah, yeah.
The new stuff is so expensive. Yeah. It's dragging the old. My combine, I have an old 9770 that I don't need maybe anymore because I have another newer one. But I didn't want to give it away. And so I didn't. And then we fixed it up real pristine.
Yeah.
And it's actually worth, you know, $150,000 more now than it was when I was going to trade it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so holding on to those type of assets at the right time is another,
cut to the chase. I think try not to be enamored by the shiny paint and the new features. Keep your stuff current because old things break down. You need to be reliable too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the last thing you want is a breakdown on a key piece of equipment in a key time because of that timing window.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so keep them well maintained. But, you know, you could spend way too much money on farm equipment these days.
And as we're talking about profitability, and it's like that's the most obvious way to
spend too much on land, and you can spend too much on farm equipment if you're not careful.
So yeah.
You
got
to watch that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so with harvest coming up, what type of advice would you give to farmers? I mean, obviously, like I said, you farm a lot of acres. So how do you get yourself mentally ready, the machine ready to get ready for a successful harvest season? And when stuff does go sideways, how do you manage? I mean, I feel like planting season, harvest season is two very stressful times of year that can go really well or go the other way.
One of the lighter ways of dealing with things that go bad, because they do all the times, is my daughter made a Instagram account called Fairwind F-Ups.
Okay. And this is your farm family?
Yeah.
Instagram account?
Yeah, it's called Fairwind F-Ups. It's just for mistakes.
Okay.
And so it's a private group, so, because we don't want my neighbors to see it.
Okay.
But just little mistakes that happen, or big ones, or, you know, you get stuck or something breaks, or...
You learn from it. There's a learn from it. I mean, and that's...
You learn from it, but also try to make... I mean, making light of it's not maybe the right way to put it, but it happens. And so losing your mind over that stuff isn't going to help any.
Yeah.
So try to make the best of it, move on. I have another little saying that I use to make them laugh. I always say safety third.
Safety third? Okay, one of the first two things you got to be safety about.
Do it right, do it neat, and do it safe.
Hmm.
And chances are, if you're doing something right and you're doing it neat, you're likely doing it safe.
Yeah.
So we joke because safety third, we say that when someone's standing where they shouldn't be or doing something dangerous. Oh, safety third.
Yeah.
But if you think about every job as being neat and right, like how can I do this quickly, or how can I, you know, use a bunch of bale wire and zip ties for this job? First of all, it's not going to last. Second of all, it might hurt somebody or whatever. So I'd rather take twice as long, almost always, to fix something right and do it neat. Put your tools away, put your hoses. I get so mad. Hydraulic hoses, just plug them in. Who cares? But now you can blow a hydraulic line because they didn't be neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So right. Do it neat.
I love that.
Tractor cab neat. Keep your, you know, your work area neat.
Yeah.
And chances are it'll be safe.
What advice, I guess, would you give to the farmer right now who, again, is not sure which way to go? And I guess you seem very optimistic about what you're doing. And so what excites you about the future of agriculture, and how would you give that advice then back to someone who right now who's not sure about where to go with farming? I mean, I feel like you're a person that should probably talk to a lot more farmers about their way of life.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So as you're asking, I'm thinking, way of life for sure. The second thing for sure is that that magical economics of agriculture versus everything else, people will always eat.
Yeah.
And so if you're in the top third of your colleagues, if you're better than two thirds of your neighbors or your colleagues across the world or whatever, so if you do maybe just a little better job, or your agronomy's just a little better, your timing's a little better, maybe a spend a little less money on that shiny new 8R that you didn't really need, or, you know, so if you're in the top third economically and agronomically, you will make a money and you will make a profit in this business.
Yeah.
Take small bites. Don't ever take one that if it's not the right bite, it's going to burn you. Just keep taking small bites.
Love that.
Never make choices that are the big win that could also be the big lose. Right.
Yeah.
Just keep nibbling away.
Yeah.
Because it's agriculture, we have great safety nets. Crop insurance is a real good deal. And so it does protect you against that weather unknown.
Yeah.
And our government's pretty good at having disaster relief programs as well. And so if it's a broad disaster and you're in the top third, you'll be all right. And again, we have a huge equity in our farm. Make sure you count what that is. Use it wisely. You'll be all right. I don't know. It's going to be here. It's an industry that will always be here. And it's like 20 years ago is the best time to plant a tree thing. You can't go back and do that, but you can still plant a tree today.
Yeah.
And so plant another tree today, hypothetically, farm wise. Plant a
plant a chicken barn. Easier said than done. But I would say I can appreciate them, why your kids and your son in law have decided to come back home and farm with you, when you bring this type of positivity and optimism to the sector, and you bring up some very valuable points. Just to wrap up, what would you say was your best piece of life advice that anyone give you? Life or business? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot. That's a big question, but...
The best piece of life advice.
Anything that anyone said, parents or teacher or mentor growing up, anything that you feel changed the trajectory of how you went about doing life because of that advice?
All
or made you laugh?
This old Italian... He always tells me these weird jokes. He moved here from Italy in the 50s, and he's still a 1950s Italian. He's nothing like the actual Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, the three F's in life, Mark, what are the three F's? So keep it in mind. Faith, family, and friends.
Love that. So it's a great way.
God bless them.
Great way of living.
I think that keeps life in balance.
Yeah, so. I love it. And I have to ask to wrap up, because you most likely have been in some fun spots and bars in Toronto. Any musicians or stars that you've met that you've been enamored with or thought it was a pretty cool life story?
The only one I can think of actually is Alice Cooper.
No way. You met Alice Cooper?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I used to actually promote rock concerts. So
before Live Nation and Ticketmaster?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I met a lot of musicians in my lifetime. And wow. I would say Alice Cooper is one, because he's the I want to bite your head off guy on the stage.
Yeah.
And there's all the goofy makeup, and it's like, it's a shtick. He is a scratch golfer. I mean, he's old now, but scratch golfer and a huge humanitarian philanthropist.
Huh.
And he cares about inner city youth. And so talking to him, I actually spend a lot of time in Africa and South America doing agricultural philanthropy for people. And when I'm in, I think that early conversations with Alice Cooper helped me understand. So that'd be my other big piece of life. I spend a lot more time figuring out how to give money away than how to make it anymore.
Amazing.
Because it helps. I don't know. It's just, it really works for me. I mean, I don't even care about the people I help.
Yeah. I'm kidding. Yeah.
But it's, I think it's really important. So Alice Cooper spends a lot, and there are others like him, but I just remember sitting down and talking to him before a concert when I was getting him to sign a charity guitar and talking about the inner city youth programs and all these things he does. And so he's just an example of people with lots of money who do great things with them. But he just stuck with me because I was younger then too. And he just, he's got this on either this stage persona that's just so crazy, but he loves people and to give away money. He's just a really nice guy and he likes athletics.
There's not many farmers in Canada that could say that some of their life advice they learned from Alice Cooper. So I feel like
Jimmy Buffett.
Which, have you met Jimmy Buffett?
God bless him.
God bless him. He just passed away.
I did. And
no God, way.
Yeah, and he also is just one of those special people.
Wow, that's amazing. I feel like, Mark, you have to promise me that when you retire, if and when you ever do, when your daughter and son-in-law or kids are, that you will write a memoir. So, okay, well, then you have time. You got to write a memoir to share some of these experiences.
Well, I have started, and it's called Corvettes, Flip-Flops, and Other Methods of Modern Farming.
I want to buy your copy. So let me know when it's published. At least I'll know where I can go to find you to sign it. But this was amazing. I feel like you and I could have chatted a lot longer than this, but this was a wonderful chat. And I feel like the advice that you're going to share with people, I think people are going to enjoy a laugh, but learn quite a bit from our conversation.
Well, you're a great interviewer.
Oh,
because otherwise I'd be like, I don't know what to say. You're great.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
That's a wrap on this episode of the Country Guide podcast. Go to country-guide.ca for more great content to spark a conversation. And subscribe to the weekly newsletter to be notified when our next podcast episode is available.